From this time last year, when Clint announced the theme for the meeting would be From Sheep to Shepherds, I've thought over and over on what I would speak upon were I given this opportunity. And I'll tell you, it's a wonderful thing to be in an assembly where you get to hear what leadership is supposed to look like and what leadership is in the church is supposed to become. And I've grown this week from hearing the lessons that have been taught. Perhaps the remarks that I have today planned are influenced by my last 18 years and the role that I've served in the public school system. But there's something I feel that is in a dilemma and crisis in our country today. The crisis I speak of is one where we lack the regard for authority that we once did. You know, as I look around today, I see that society no longer regards positions of authority with the same respect and the same honor that they did at one time. I think we're all probably in general agreement this morning when I say that we're living in a broken culture. Sociologists and anthropologists will tell us that one of the indicators of the health of a culture is how the younger generations treat those in the older generation. I was appalled this summer and then even enraged when I turned on the news to find that there were teens in New York City throwing buckets of water on the police officers who were trying to do their job there. Just last month in our own state here in Alabama, there was a sheriff who responded to a call in a gas station. The children there were being unruly in the parking lot, the teenagers were. Whenever he got there to investigate that situation, one of the young men simply walked up and shot the sheriff in the parking lot and then fled the scene. Clearly today, there's a disrespect, a disregard, and a rebellion to authority that has reached a tipping point in our society. The daily occurrences that we see on the news and on our social media feeds remind us that it seems like it's never going to stop. But I think the question we need to ask ourselves this morning is, when and how does that begin? How do people learn to not regard and respect authority? And I think we've all talked this week and understand that that begins very early in the home. Kids passively learn to disregard and disrespect authority at home. And you say, well, how do they do that? Well, whenever you turn on the news today, you can hardly turn on to see anyone not throwing insults and hurling injurious statements towards the highest elected officials of our country. And then whenever we turn the news off and we sit there and agree with the things that have been said, we teach our children that authority really means nothing. And in so doing, we violate Romans chapter 13 and verse 2 and teach them that authority really means nothing to us either. Today, whenever parents harmonize with the disdain that goes on in the government, we teach our children that really authority is only as good as long as we agree with it. Today, whenever we look at our teachers and our police and our lawmakers in the country, we begin to look at them as a society, as public enemies, instead of the people who have been given leadership positions over us. And I tell you, as members of the church, if we're looking for those positions to restore authority back in our homes, back in the church, and back in society in general, we're going to be looking for quite a long time yet. God's plans and dealings with mankind have always involved a healthy recognition and understanding of authority and a submission and obedience to it, and this begins very early in the home. From Eden, God would give commandments to Adam to pass on to his family so that they would know how he would have them to live. During the patriarchal dispensation, God would then pass on the commandments to the fathers of families that they would lead and walk in the ways of God. The law of Moses would later bind the responsibility of raising obedient children upon the fathers. Deuteronomy chapter 21 tells us that if a man have a stubborn and rebellious son, after he would not heed the first and second admonition, to bring him to the elders of the city outside the gates, and there he would be stoned to death. Even yet today, when we look in the New Testament, we find that the responsibility to train children is placed upon the fathers of households. Fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, the Bible says in Ephesians chapter 6, but bring them up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. Paul would give Timothy that prerequisite for church leadership, that if a man know not how to rule his own house, how shall he take care of the church of God? You know, this is a sad qualification for many men today, for I have known men myself who in every other regard that we've discussed here this week have made fine leaders in many cases and places, but because of the actions of their family and the things that their home life represents, have been disqualified from the highest leadership position in the church. It's a sad circumstance when that becomes the case, and many people may think that that's sad and unfair. But I want you to know that God demands that his people not conform to this world, but prove what is good and acceptable and perfect, the will of God, Romans chapter 12, verse 2 says, and that includes our leadership and our families. Fathers, we have a hefty responsibility on our shoulders today that will affect the eternal destiny of our children and also ourselves, if we do not understand what that responsibility is, we certainly need to be more familiar with that. I want to talk today about the things that go on around us that we need to be more familiar with so that we can handle those problems that may arise in our families. The lack of diligent and godly fathers has created a plethora of society's problems that we see today. A recent statistic that I found said that 43% of our youth will grow up with no father in their home in this country. Is that not a staggering statistic? That 43% of our youth will have no one in the home to call a father. The result becomes more behavioral problems when they reach school age. They're more likely to abuse drugs and alcohol, more likely to commit crimes and end up in prison. Statistics also tell us they're 5 times more likely to live the rest of their lives in poverty. They're more likely to carry guns and drugs to school, 3 times more likely, that is. They're 2 times more likely to drop out of school and 7 times more likely to become teenage parents themselves. A recent training that I was invited to in my position in the school told us that of the mass shootings that go on in schools these days, there's really no rhyme or reason that people can point to except for one common thread that seems to stand out in all of those, and that's there's no father in the home of the one who's been the perpetrator of those crimes. Of course, there's no lack of data points for that. For just last week, when I did my last research to put this little lesson together, I found that there have been 406 mass shootings in this country just this year. You see, the lack of fathers has brought about a societal problem that seems to be so far out of control that no one knows how to rein it back in. Alternatively, though, kids who grow up with their fathers in their homes and are involved with their dads statistically demonstrate greater emotional stability and social well-being. They have better cognitive development. The girls are far less likely, it says, to engage in promiscuous sexual behavior before marriage, and they are less trouble in school and with the law after graduating from school. Obviously, without fathers today, responsibilities to bring up children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord goes neglected. And the result of that has been, so far, a skewed view of what manhood and masculinity and fatherhood are supposed to be like in the home and in society at large. And I'm afraid today it has polluted our perception of what authority is supposed to look like. As Christians, we cannot allow society's influence to take away from what God has commanded men to be in their families. Manhood and masculinity have been under attack for a long time now in this country. As a matter of fact, traditional masculinity has now been labeled as toxic. The American Psychological Association tells us that traditional masculinity is psychologically harmful. The forces of political correctness now have villainized traditional gender roles in our country. And I understand that there's 18 states now that if you don't want to be a male or a female, you can choose the letter X to go on your driver's license so that you don't have to affiliate with either one of those. We need to know that God created both male and female whenever he created this world and inhabited it with creatures, and both are equally loved by God. We need to understand that. Both are equally loved by God, and in heaven they're going to have equal status. But on earth, God has given us distinctive roles, and he expects us to fulfill those. He expects us to recognize his authority and then to submit to the authority that he's placed over us. Part of that authority involves fathers fulfilling their roles in the family, and somewhere along the way we seem to have lost that, at least in society. Modern feminism movement would tell us that the distinction of these roles no longer exists. I heard a very fitting quote about feminism not long ago that said that feminists wanted the power of men and then the privileges of women, but the responsibility of neither. And I think that's a very fitting quote when we stop and think about that social movement that people try to get themselves involved in. But what it's created is a modern vision of manhood today that's weak, that's silent, that's passive, at a time in our country when we need the opposite of that. We need men who are strong and proactive and courageous and yet humble and obedient in God's service so that they can lead their families the way that God would have them to be. I find today in the school that I work that boys are obsessed with their cell phones and their video games, and whenever they begin to text a young lady, they are more prone to have an obscene conversation than they are to have one that you would call respectable. You put them in a face-to-face conversation with a young lady, and it's almost impossible for them to operate because they're so addicted and attracted to the digital communication that they're so used to now. I find today that young men learn to be heroes in their video games, but whenever you put them in a situation where they have the opportunity to actually step up and be a hero, they shrink in cowardice at that opportunity because they don't know what it looks like to stand up and be a manly man in front of others. Today, we need to recognize that toxic masculinity and those who would persuade us against it have persuaded us against being the men that we should be in our families. Today, if we continue to allow the politically correct culture to influence how we lead our families, it's only going to further deteriorate. The things I want to mention from this point forward, I say, as Peter said in 2 Peter chapter 1, that I'm just simply not going to neglect to remind you of the things that you already know. As members of the church, we know these things, but I think we need to talk about them and be reminded of them, not so much for the older generations who have seen these things come to fruition and know that these things are true, but for those of us who are young fathers and need to be reminded of these things, for those of us who are going to raise children in a society that does not regard authority, we want to talk about three things today that God expects and yet even demands of those that would be fathers in His family. First one of those is that He expects us to be providers for our family. The Bible tells us in 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 8, if any provide not for his own, and especially those of his own house, he's denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. The father is to be a family provider, that is to provide the necessities of food and clothing and shelter for his children, but it doesn't stop with those material things. Providing is not limited to just material possessions, but we must also provide training and education. I think you would agree today, if you've been around anyone who's tried to work in the last generation, that our work ethic in this country is seriously deficient at this point. How to treat others is something we need to provide for our family and teach them. Whenever we teach them how their relationships with others should work, we need to model what it means to be responsible citizens in society. One of the greatest things you can do as a young father is model how to love their mother, how to treat her with respect and honor in the home. Today, functional and loving home lives are invaluable to training our children how God would have them to live. I've seen dysfunctional homes that severely hinder the spiritual growth of young people, and their maturity lags far behind. Men, today, if we don't provide for our children in these things, the Bible says we're worse than an infidel. That carries with it eternal consequences when you stop and think about it, and we need to be more serious about how we teach our sons to provide for their families. But secondly, today, I find as fathers that are going to be after God's pattern, we need to teach our children the idea of discipline, love, and respect and obedience. God expects us to train our children to be obedient and then to correct them when needed. I see men today who are afraid to discipline their kids. They let their kids talk to them and anyone else as disrespectfully as they choose. They let them ignore adults. Have you ever noticed kids in the grocery store, I'm sure you have, who throw the temper tantrums when they don't get what they want? I'm reminded whenever my kids were little, still small, we used to go to the grocery store and have to get a couple of buggies to get everything out at one time because we shop, try to do it once a month. And as we were standing in line, we had a buggy in front of us, and then we had R2. And my Melanie, who's sitting somewhere over in the audience here, was just about 4 years old. And there was a lady in front of them that had a daughter that was throwing herself in the floor because she couldn't have all those trinkets right there at the checkout line. And that lady stood over her and said, "Young lady, if you don't stand up, you're going to be in trouble." And you know what she did next? Get this. She said, "One, two," and in the sweetest four-year-old voice my Melanie could muster, she leaned back and said, "Hey, Dad, we've got a counter up here." Disciplinary counting has become the way that people handle their problems in public because they're afraid to discipline their children. They're afraid because they know that the political backlash of that may be something they're not willing to face. Child psychologists have reversed the corporal punishment role serves in the home. Detrimental, they say that it is. But if it's not done out of love, I should say that that would be true. But the Bible repeats that if you love your son, then you will chasten him at times. The rod and reproof give wisdom, and a child left to himself will bring his mother to shame. I've seen this firsthand working in the schools over the last couple of years. As fathers, we have the responsibility to teach our children's obedience and respect that will save them from a lot of problems in life, and it will save their soul from hell. But finally, most importantly, we have the obligation to teach them their responsibility to God. The parable of the sower and the seed in Matthew chapter 13, Mark 4, and Luke chapter 8 reminds us that there was some seed that fell on stony ground where it could not take root. You ever wondered why it had no root? Why souls and spirits would not have any root? And the reason for that is the ground had not been prepared to receive anything that would grow in it. At home, it is when a child is taught of God and learns of his faith early. But the statistics tell us again that over 40 million American children this year will receive no religious training. They'll not enter any denominational building, will not read nor have read to them the Bible. And a recent statistic says that over 70% of them between the ages of 18 and 22 will begin to question their faith in God and even stop going to church. Children learn by mimicking their parents about God. The sweetest thing you'll ever see is your children when they learn to pray. Whenever they start listening to you, they learn those things to say. Whenever they sing, it's even sweet whenever you hear them try to sing the hymns that you sing in church services. And even when you do the things you don't want them to mimic, such as identifying the disciplinary counter, then they'll remind you of those things that you've taught them as well. Children are a blessing and a responsibility we need to take seriously as fathers. And we have a responsibility to use this moldable age to teach them about their Creator and help them put down the roots of their faith. Society will tell you to loosen the reins. Give them a little slack. Take up a little bit on them there and let them express themselves in all matters. But the Bible says, train up a child in the way that he should go, and when he's old, he'll not depart from it. We need to take the driver's seat in our family, fathers, and start leading our families the way that God would have for them to go. Again, Timothy was told, if a man can't rule his house, how's he going to rule the house of God? Today, if we hinder God's plan for leadership by not leading in our homes, because we first of all teach our children not to respect authority, not to have obedience to those that are in positions of authority. But secondly, we disqualify ourselves from leadership positions in the future by not ruling our families. And we leave a pitiful example for our sons and daughters to overcome in the future. We can't look to the world for the pattern on how to raise our families. We have to get back to acting like men, as Paul told the Corinthians, 1 Corinthians chapter 16. And if we ever expect the church to fulfill its mission in our generation, we need to step up and tend to the sheep that are in our pastures first. Thank you for your time.